Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all to Trisha's True Crime Radio. We have a very, very special show tonight. In 2011, over 1,500 children were murdered. It's an awful thought. And we're still numb from the murder of 20 children by a monster with a semi-automatic a couple of weeks ago. Now, we know our memories of the kids will fade with time. That's just a fact. And then we go on with our lives. We have to partially let go of the memory of kids being killed because it sucks the life out of us if we have that horrible memory with us all the time. It's a survival technique. It's time now for the rhetorical question of the day. Why is it? Why is it one child murdered in 1996 is the topic of conversation by thousands of people every single day? This crime is considered the second biggest mystery, murder mystery, with only Jack the Ripper ahead of it. Only one child has ever been found in her basement, bound loosely with a garrote around her neck, a practice ransom note, and then a full 2.5-page ransom note found in the kitchen, and that child is JonBenet Ramsey, killed on, we believe, December 25th, 1996. Remember that? We were a nation obsessed with JonBenet. Why was that? I think it had to do with pretty much the whole package that came along with this murder mystery. We have a beautiful little girl, a mother obsessed with these really weird, odd kitty pageants, a very cold but wealthy father, and the strange older brother. There was political connections involved. It read like an over-the-top, over-dramatic Lifetime movie of the week. Now, I actually became obsessed with the JonBenet Ramsey case. My family thought I was so weird. Well, weirder than I usually was, anyway. I could recite any obscure fact about the Ramsey case any time. Now, that's a very strange talent to have, let me tell you. It doesn't go over well at dinner parties. And I always worried that my husband might use it against me in a court of law at some point. By the way, he is my ex-husband now. And I'm still looking for that one wonderful guy who thinks it's interesting that I know that John Ramsey took off his pants to crawl through his basement window. But I wasn't the only one. Millions followed the JonBenet Ramsey case, and now, 16 years later, we still have thousands, if not millions, of people following the case online. It's still very active. It's not active in the Boulder DA's office where it should be, but it's active all over the world. JonBenet is still a very popular forum on websleuth.com, and at forumsforjustice.org, it's the main topic of conversation. Now, there are those who never, ever gave up in the search for truth. In just a moment, one of these men will join us, Chief of Police of Telluride, Colorado, James Kohler. Chief Kohler wrote a very, I think it's a scathing, fascinating, incredible book about the Boulder District Attorney's investigation into the JonBenet Ramsey case. He knows what he's talking about because Chief Kohler was the DA's lead Ramsey investigator for a while until he quit in frustration. And also, you may remember a young and really cute detective who gave up so much for a little girl he never met. You remember former Ramsey detective Steve Thomas? Well, I'm proud to call Steve my friend, and Steve never says I'm strange because I know what type of boots Patsy Ramsey was wearing Christmas night. At least, he never says I'm strange to my face. Steve Thomas, welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio. It has been a long time since we heard from you, and I know everyone is just waiting. How are you tonight, my dear?
Yeah, I'm good, Trisha. Merry Christmas to you, and thank you for reaching out, and nice to hear from you again, and thanks for including me this evening.
Well, believe me, you are always welcome on this show. Steve, we're not going to get in the meat and potatoes of the case with you tonight. I just wanted you to check in and tell us how you've been doing. Tell us how you've been doing. Let us in inside the mind of Steve Thomas. What have you been doing lately? Is that a scary place to go?
Yeah, since I left the police department in 98, it's hard to believe it's been 16 years this Christmas since this homicide in Boulder, and left the police department, later wrote a book, lived overseas for several years in Australia, but after several stops in the interim, I'm firmly grounded in Southwest Florida, where I reside anonymously. Very few people down here have any idea of my former life, and I like it that way. But no, I've gone back to a second career of renovate old houses, and I think I mentioned that in the book perhaps. But just a very very quiet life as a citizen.
Well, Steve, you say that nobody recognizes you. Occasionally, somebody has got to come up and go, "Gosh, you look familiar." Doesn't that still happen?
That does, and rarely do I let on. I've had opportunities over the years. You know, the media calls whenever there's the sensational case in the news, and I've politely declined, and you know, before the Ramsey case, I was happily anonymous, as you know, working in an undercover narcotics unit, and then came that proverbial sort of 15 minutes of fame that wasn't necessarily sought, but now I've come back the other side and happily enjoy that anonymity, and occasionally I'm asked to speak to law enforcement about the case, and I'll certainly do that. But otherwise, yep, just happily doing my thing. And although I do think about the case probably on a daily basis, in one way or another, and certainly now during the Christmas holidays. Yep, just don't have any public persona anymore, and that's okay. Just privately living my life.
Good, there you go. We talked about this years ago. I don't know if you remember, Steve. We're talking with Steve Thomas, former police detective on the JonBenet Ramsey case with the Boulder Police Department. Steve, we talked about the day that this would happen, and that is that you would go a full day without ever thinking of JonBenet Ramsey. That has not happened yet, has it?
No, it hasn't, and probably as your other guest, Chief James Kohler, will mention, I'm sure anybody who was immersed in this investigation felt a heavy responsibility and to seek justice and to find an appropriate conclusion to the case, and I think that's what's frustrating, and I don't want to speak for Chief Kohler, but Michael Caine, the former special prosecutor, myself, perhaps had there been an appropriate resolution to this case, we could have, for lack of a better term, put it behind us. I don't know, but since it remains open, unresolved, the cold case, I think those inside the investigation, probably like me, think about it quite often, if not daily.
Sometimes I'm sure it's hard for you to believe, Steve, that it's been 16 years. It doesn't seem that long, but then again, on another side, it seems like it's been going on forever. Do you think we will ever give up in our fascination with this case?
I think it's sort of reached a status, perhaps alongside you mentioned some famous cases, the Lindbergh kidnapping. I think it's sort of reached that sort of elevated status in the mind of the community and the public. And this is one. I still hear people talking about it to this day. And even having lived overseas a couple of times, I heard people speak about it, saw it in the media overseas. I guess, surprising on one hand that it remains such a point of consciousness in the public's mind.
Okay, let's be honest here, Steve. When you see, you know, idiots like Michael Tracy, and I'm calling them that, you're not, or others that get on there and start talking about this supposed intruder, you want to shoot your TV like Elvis, don't you? You just want to, I mean, it must be so frustrating for you to hear this, knowing that it's total, complete baloney.
Well, I'll tell you, Tricia, it was most frustrating probably in those 2 years that I was involved in the case when it was active, but I came to the point that the people, you know, who matter to me, the Jim Kohlers, the Mike Keynes, the people who are more authoritative on the case, their opinions are of consequence. Others that you might mention, I dismiss because I know what I know, and I tend to listen to professional colleagues and peers that speak from a body of work that the investigators are familiar with.
Well, Steve, if you ever have the need to have your blood pressure shoot up so high that blood spurts out your eyeballs, watch the Aphrodite Jones true crime story on JonBenet Ramsey. It will make you crazy. It's the absolute worst one. And Chief Kohler even mentions it in his book. And that's the latest one that's out there. That's what's so frustrating. Steve Thomas, tell us how you met James Kohler and tell us a little bit about the man.
Yep. When I was a police officer in Boulder and still a young police officer in a blue uniform pushing a black and white around out on the street, I had the good fortune to have as my sergeant for a period of time, Jim Kohler. And I can say he's widely respected by his peers. He rose through the ranks and is now a police chief, and I know he's active with the Colorado Association of Chiefs of Police. He comes from a perspective having worked this case, knows this case, is a current police chief. So I think his CV and background and credentials and his peer respect sort of speak for themselves. But I always enjoyed working for Jim Kohler, very strict, squared away, excellent police officer, excellent investigator. Was a good sergeant to work for, and I learned a lot about police work from Jim Kohler. And so when he later would step into this frying pan as the lead investigator at the DA's office assigned to the Ramsey case, that gave me some comfort and assurance that, you know, it would be once again reviewed through the eyes of a professional police investigator. Having read his book recently when it came out, was disappointed, to say the least, that he experienced many things, not the least of which the same sort of kill the messenger phenomena from that DA's office at the time. And I'm just very impressed with his book and what he's put forth.
So we're talking with Steve Thomas, Boulder detective on the JonBenet Ramsey case, and we're talking about James Kohler. He is the chief of police of Telluride, and he wrote the amazing book, A Foreign Faction, Who Kidnapped JonBenet Ramsey, and we'll be talking with Chief Kohler here in just a moment, where we're talking about him behind his back. I wonder if his ears are burning. Steve, were you surprised when James Kohler, he was on the job with the Boulder District Attorney's Office less than a year, if I remember correctly. Were you surprised when he quit, or did you go, yeah, I get it. He went through what I went through, just like you said. Were you surprised that he did quit?
Well, I didn't know. We had spoken a couple of times during that period, but only on a professional level as he was investigating the case. And I think we may have spoken a time or two where he wanted some clarification on something or another that I may have been able to help with. And so we had a couple of conversations, I recall, in which it was, you know, absolutely on. He was an investigator, and I was just relaying case information as I recalled it. but he didn't share with me any of, you know, any frustrations or anything that was going on inside the DA's office. So I was surprised when he quit, but I was surprised to upon reading his book to see all of the frustrations that he encountered with the same institution, this DA's office, while only trying to do his job. And so I didn't think much would surprise me about the case anymore until I read his book and read, you know, some profound and staggeringly significant revelations that he made about various things that went on and a couple of items of evidentiary nature that just in any reasonable review or assessment of the case, perhaps like my experience, just left me a bit dumbfounded that some of the experiences that he had were identical to mine, albeit, you know, some years later and with a different district attorney in place. Again, I give Chief Kohler a lot of credit that he was trying to work towards a definitive conclusion to the case and ran into a lot of the same frustrations and roadblocks that I experienced.
I think that shows what type of person James Kohler is, because if that would have been me, Steve, and you would have been my friend and colleague, I would have called you every day just bitching nonstop. You would have gotten so sick of me because I wouldn't be able to contain it. But he was so professional and amazing, and we have the man, the legend, right here with us right now. Chief Kohler, how are you tonight?
Very good, Tricia. Happy holidays, and thank you for the invitation to participate this evening.
Hey, okay, tell us something interesting about Steve Thomas, like a little dirt that we can use later against him. Do you have anything juicy about him that you can let us in on?
He likes his coffee black when you go to Starbucks.
Oh, brother. Well, that's Steve. That's, yeah, that's about as much as anybody knows about Steve Thomas. You're pretty secretive, Steve.
Try to let that slip.
Steve, I want to ask you something, and if you feel uncomfortable, please don't, you don't have to answer it. You mentioned when you were reading James Kohler's book, A Foreign Faction Who Kidnapped JonBenet Ramsey, that you thought that nothing in the case could surprise you anymore, but you were very surprised. Would you care to tell us about one or two of those surprises in James Kohler's book that you just went, oh my goodness, I can't believe this?
I will. And although publicly, as you know, Tricia, because you've had this conversation with me before, I really don't publicly discuss, you know, factual or evidentiary stuff in public any longer, but I will answer your question directly. I'll give you an example of one of the things I just could not comprehend, and it related to some of the advanced DNA evidence testing that was not available to us some, you know, 10 plus years prior, and that was this touch DNA. And if you'll remember, the district attorney, this Mary Keenan Lacey, they really sort of, in my humble estimation, as I witnessed it, their DNA exoneration of the family, one of the things that Chief Kohler cites in his book was that there was other unrelated third and fourth party DNA on other instruments in clothing, which was conveniently not disclosed at the time, but was made party to this exoneration of certain persons, and that was just a jaw dropper that you know, DNA is DNA, but you know, if you're going to put it all out there on the table, put it all out there on the table. And when I read Chief Kohler's book, and I don't want to use the word, the way that was presented to me as a member of the public at the time, I thought was rather opaque. I didn't think there was full disclosure there. And then reading in Kohler's book, I certainly, from a former investigator's perspective, looked at that in entirely new light when other male DNA, third and fourth party, as I mentioned, were on some of those instruments. So that's just one example.
Well, and again, we're talking with Steve Thomas, former Ramsey detective with the Boulder Police Department. Also, James Kohler, Chief James Kohler, who wrote the book A Foreign Faction, Who Kidnapped JonBenet Ramsey. Basically what it was that Mary Lacy wants to say there's this foreign DNA and therefore it's an intruder. She never mentions the fact that the DNA is less than a single skin cell and it's so degraded that, we can go on and on about that. But then she doesn't mention that there's other DNA that's found. And if that's the case, then there were more intruders in there that night because she's going to give that half a skin cell the weight of being the intruder who killed JonBenet Ramsey. She's got to give the other DNA just as much weight, and she didn't. You know, she is by far one of the biggest cowards I've ever met in my life. I've never met her, but she came out, she exonerated the Ramseys, which meant nothing, but yet she wouldn't take any questions, and it was just very, very frustrating. Let's go to James Kohler now. Chief Kohler, again, welcome back. I am so delighted that you're with us. Let's talk a little bit. And, Steve, I hope you can stay with us for a little bit. If you can, that would be great, okay?
I will.
Great.
Thank you for the invitation. I just wanted to say I'm really pleased and excited that Steve was able to be on the program tonight. I was really happy when you emailed me that today.
Well, it was because I told him, I said, Steve, if you don't come on, Kohler's going to reveal what kind of coffee you get at Starbucks, and you did already, so it didn't matter. Okay, Chief Kohler, when you found out in your book, you talk about this new DNA that has come out. Again, Mary Lacy gives all the credit to this one half of a skin cell that's damaged, is that's got to be the intruder, but yet she ignores this other DNA. Refresh our memories. How did you approach them and say, did you just say, what the hell, and throw the reports down? I mean, that's what I would have done. I would just say, what the hell, and let them try and explain it. How did you approach them? I bet you're a little more diplomatic.
Well, you need to recall that the touch DNA tests had not been conducted until after I left the office. Mm-hmm. At the time that I was the lead investigator from the summer of 2005 to the spring of 2006, the only DNA that was present at the time was the DNA distal stain, the below 7 in the underwear, and then in the waistband of the underwear. And then the foreign male and female DNA that had been discovered early on beneath JonBenet's fingernails. So the touch DNA that was discovered later after I left the office, I didn't learn about until I participated in the cold case task force gathering that took place in February 2009. So that was after she had exonerated the family earlier that summer in 2008, at the end of the summer. And before she was getting ready to leave office.
Well, I'll ask you, what the hell was she thinking? And I know you can't, that's again the rhetorical question, but why can't she say, I guess I don't understand why Mary Lacy can't go, you know what, I think I made a mistake here. There weren't three intruders or four intruders in there that night, so maybe I need to dial back on this DNA. Maybe you can just let us in a little bit, Chief Kohler. The people who work there or that were working with her, were they frustrated? Because you must have spoken to them somewhat a little bit. Like you said, you were part of the cold case task force there for a little bit. What was their feeling when this came out?
Well, I think the read I got on the group was that they were kind of shocked to learn that there were some additional touch DNA samples that had been discovered. And when we were notified that additional DNA had been found on the cord used in the the bindings, and on the garrote, and then on there was, as I mentioned in the book, there was also DNA from Burke as well as Patsy on the pink nightgown that had been discovered in the wine cellar near JonBenet's body.
Mm-hmm.
And it all took us kind of by surprise when they shared the information about the additional DNA samples. And we all sat there quietly for a little bit, and then I remember a female lab technician scratching her head and asking the question, and she said, "Does that mean we've got a possibility of something like 4 or 5 perpetrators involved in this?" You know, as we were talking about the additional DNA evidence that had been collected from the crime scene. And it finally dawned on us that, you know, not only was their DNA on the leggings that kind of matched what was in the underwear, but that now we were confronted with additional samples that suggested, given today's technology, that perhaps additional perpetrators were involved. And it's always been my argument from the very beginning when I first started to become acquainted with the facts that there were so many other things that you need to look at that helped provide kind of a picture of maybe what happened, that you couldn't rely solely on one piece of DNA evidence to the exclusion of everything else that you had to consider. And it seemed like some people had blinders on, that they wouldn't even consider any type of family involvement or look for any reason of family involvement as long as they could pin their hat on the DNA and point to that as being something that belonged to a perpetrator. And the science is out there that suggests that that's not necessarily the case.
And that's what's so frustrating, I think, for the general public. When we hear this, it's like the obvious is here, people. Don't give that much weight to touch DNA. I think that's a problem with touch DNA, is we give it way too much weight. I don't see how it can clear anybody of any crime or point to anybody, really, because it is touch DNA, meaning it's such a minuscule amount of a skin cell that it could have come from anywhere. Chief Kohler, we're talking with Chief James Kohler. He wrote the incredible book. You've got to read it. It's called A Foreign Faction Who Kidnapped JonBenet Ramsey. The book was released this summer. What has been going on since the book release with you?
Well, I did your radio show. I did a couple radio shows for some programs in Australia. I've had some interest and calls from people in Great Britain, Australia. There's been some online orders for the book from out of country. Unfortunately, the website is not set up to be able to handle the shipping and postal fees to send outside the U.S. I did have some conversations with some of the networks, the TV networks, about doing an investigative program, but it hasn't gone anywhere at the moment. And what was kind of so exciting was in October, I did a Meet the Author presentation at our library in Telluride, the Wilkinson Public Library. And they've hosted a number of writing classes and such over the years and have hosted a number of author events as well. So I gave a presentation to a small group of people and kind of talked about my writing process, what I learned, the publishing process. Then I gave a short presentation on some of the evidence in the DA, on the JonBenet's case. Talked about some of the things that I believed pointed away from an intruder and evidence that was kind of disassembled over a period of time that Boulder investigators prior to my arrival had questioned, and then some other things that came up during my review as well. So that was kind of fun. It was enjoyable, a good exchange with people. And then they edited that presentation and put it on their website and YouTube. And there were some things in there that I wasn't quite ready to, I think, let out in the video format. So I asked that they pull it. But it was there for about 24 hours. They're doing some additional editing. And I've been asked to come back and do another Meet the Author presentation with them at the end of January. And may do a more of a video presentation on that one as well that would be published on the library's website as well as on YouTube.
Well, we'll get back to the book in just a moment. I have like kind of an odd question here, and this is to both you, Chief Kohler, and to Steve Thomas. It is interesting how overseas in Australia and Great Britain, how interested they are in the case, in the JonBenet Ramsey case. I had the great pleasure of going to Australia with my son, and I was shocked to find how much they all knew about it, how they didn't believe the parents. They were very, very attuned and smart. Steve, did you find that as well? You lived overseas for a while. Did you... were you shocked at how interested other people in the world were in the JonBenet Ramsey case?
Well, interesting you mention Australia and Great Britain because with my wife's work, she was transferred to London and we lived in the UK for a bit. And then I, in the interim, have lived in Australia or had lived in Australia for several years. But again, Trish, this won't surprise you. I'd hear people talking about it perhaps even over a beer, and they'd be telling me their thoughts, but they had no idea who I was.
Oh, wasn't that wild?
Yeah.
Didn't that just...
Yeah,
weren't you just tempted to go, it's me, and stand on the table? I would, but
well,
you didn't.
Funny, when I left and we moved back to the United States, I went down to the local library and donated a couple of copies of my book and signed them. And the librarians were just stunned because I liked the library anyway. And so they had no idea. So I guess it became quite a little story when I moved that, hey, right here in our midst. But I found Australians to be quite the crime buffs, the true crime buffs. They really sort of... got into it, and the same in the UK, a very thoughtful, deliberative assessment of the case. Unlike just the sort of tabloid headline in America, I found them to be more sort of, when they got interested in something, they were keen to sort of delve into the factual basis and not just what perhaps the Globe tabloid had on the cover.
And I agree with you that they are very interested in the case. One thing I did find in Australia was that they were very welcoming to Americans, which is not the case in a lot of places in Europe. Even in London, a lot of times I was treated. I've been to London several times. That's where my mother was born and raised. And they don't like Americans too much sometimes in London. But in Australia, boy, they loved us. It was great. But in Great Britain, aren't they more of the an intruder did it, or are they into the truth? Do you know, Steve? I mean, I'm not quite sure.
Well, and I guess I can't, as far as the generality goes, I perhaps can't speak to that, just the Brits that I, you know, perhaps spoke with on occasion. I probably don't have a good answer. But back to the Australia comment, for full disclosure, I do have to mention that I spoke more about the Ramsey case in a 2-hour lunch I had with a delightful lady in Byron Bay, Australia, while I was living there, and that was Tricia Griffith and her
That's
son,
right.
who happened to be travelers down under that we met up for lunch while I was there.
That was really fun. That was one of the highlights, and I brought my son, and he was so thrilled to meet Steve Thomas. He couldn't wait to hear Steve Thomas tell the story of shooting the guy in the knee, and the guy said, that didn't hurt, and he kept coming at you. Oh, he still talks about that story. He's 16.
Well, you're close, Trish, but yeah.
Something like that. I made the story bigger than it really was, you know, to impress him, so I do that a lot, so just so you know.
Okay.
Oh, we have James Kohler with us. Chief Kohler, back to you now. You wrote the book, Foreign Faction, The Kidnapping of JonBenet Ramsey, or Who Kidnapped JonBenet Ramsey, excuse me. Okay, I'm going to ask the big question. This is not to Steve Thomas. This is to James Kohler. I wish I had like a sound effect that symbolized doom. Has Linwood, the Ramsey's attorney, contacted you or hinted about anything in any way?
I haven't heard anything, any type of correspondence directed to me from him. The last I heard, not long after the publication of my book, was that they were still leaning towards the identification of an intruder based on the DNA evidence. So that's the last I've heard, really, where he's offered any type of comment on my publication.
Don't you think, Chief Kohler, the fact that nothing has come from the Ramsey's side, nothing, it has been as quiet as anything I've ever heard, that speaks volumes. I have always said that the truth is like kryptonite to the Ramsey's and their side. They will run from it. It will kill them. Doesn't that speak to you like it does to me, their silence?
Well, I guess you could draw that conclusion. My thoughts are that I went to some pretty extreme lengths to disassemble some of the evidence of the intruder, as did
right.
Steve and other folks that worked on that case in the early days. And, you know, I had the benefit of coming across other evidence that, you know, didn't exist at the time, the touch DNA. I think that's pretty significant when you look at the implements that also had foreign DNA, and if you follow the evidence, as a lot of people have encouraged, it leads you to the conclusion that someone other than just one individual was involved. Now, is that likely? Is that probable? I'd say no. You know, the advantage is that I think there's evidence of an internal toy used possibly for the abrasions that were found on John Monet's back. The stun gun, I think, has been totally exercised from the theory of an intruder.
Right.
And if Lou Smith were here today, he'd have to say, you know, well, I was wrong. That stun gun doesn't match up with the injuries. And if there's no stun gun, then perhaps we really do need to look at the family and find out why or how they may have been involved.
Yeah,
so,
but do you really think he would say that? I don't think he'd say that with the evidence staring him in the face. Or do you think he would?
I honestly don't know. I only had a few very brief conversations with Lou. I know Steve had some very in-depth conversations with him. And in spite of some of the evidence that was argued back in those days, you know, when Steve was on the case when it was still a warm case, Lou still wouldn't accept some of the things that suggested family was involved. But, I think what it spelled out in a fashion where evidence that was discovered by Boulder PD investigators way on early and other new things that have come up in the last, you know, few years, that opens the door to other depositions and other things that perhaps the Ramsey family doesn't want to go down that path. They sued a lot of people. I don't remember what Steve's experience was, how long it took them to file notice of intent to sue. I think it was only a matter of months when Carol McKinley did an article with Fox that they received notice of intent. So, you know, it's still possible, I suspect, but that opens the door to other possibilities that would, you know, come to my benefit as well.
Well, it'd be very unpleasant for them. Like I've always said, I've tried to get Linwood to sue me forever, and he ignores me like he should, which was really irritating. But the thought of having John and Burke, I mean, Burke can't be protected anymore, having to undergo questioning by you and your attorneys, I think that's the powerful kryptonite that's going to keep them away. Because the thing I like about your book, the many things I like about your book, one of them being there's no maliciousness in there. There's no anger there. It's all very professional, and it's done from the heart. You can tell, Chief Kohler, that this case has grabbed your heart, and you want the truth to come out, just like Steve Thomas's book. It's, you know, you don't depend on gossip, you depend on facts, and that, to the Ramseys, is a very, very scary thing. I do have a question from one of our listeners tonight, and this goes to Chief Kohler. There is a rumor, and I've never been able to confirm or deny or whatever. Was there ever any pornography found on any of the computers in John Ramsey's office or at home anywhere?
You know, I would have to say that I never discovered any of that during my read of the reports and stuff, but, you know, Steve was much more intricately involved in that, and I think when those topics actually came up in the early days about child pornography, so, you know, he may be able to answer that if you choose to do so,
well,
but nothing I ever saw.
Yeah, I don't. There was nothing in Steve's book about it, so that's why I was wondering if there was anything that new that came up. There are so many rumors out there that it's just, it's, you know, it's really hard to sift through them all. I have a question.
You know, if I can comment on that.
Sure.
You know, I think, you know, Steve sent me a copy of his book not long after it was published, and I think he had the same intent of trying to reveal his frustrations, but also provide a factual picture of all the obstacles that he faced when he was working that case as a lead investigator. I think it may have come up during our last interview, Tricia, a couple of days after the release of the book, and that is, you know, I didn't go with any big publishing company. I did it on my own to try to get it out there. So it's possible that the family's just hoping that, you know, this is going to die away and it's not going to be anything that really grabs anybody's attention because there hasn't been really any big media push. And I think, Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I remember you were actually hitting some of the larger network shows when you're talking about the release of your book, and I haven't really done that. So there's that, that perhaps they're just concerned that they won't garner that much attention.
Steve, yes, you remember that, the classic Larry King live show. Yeah, you did do a lot of media, right, Steve?
Yeah, I did. At the and certainly the publishing company that I used put together a lot of that, and participated in that and did a lot of media surrounding the release of the book at the time, and perhaps that put a bigger target on my back.
I think it did.
At the time, yeah.
Well, Chief Kohler, are you willing to go on Good Morning America or any of those other shows if they contact you?
Well, those were some of the initial inquiries that had come out not too long after the release of the book. Shelley Ross has been assisting me like she did with Steve. He introduced me to her.
Mm-hmm.
Retired ABC producer. Those discussions have kind of stalled at the moment, so I'm not quite sure exactly what their interest still is at the moment. You know, perhaps I should have taken advantage of that early on, not long after the book was published or even before the book was published, but just didn't go that route. So that's where we stand today.
Let's do a little hypothetical here. If let's say CBS or NBC called you and said, I want you on the morning show, or we want to do a story about you right now, but you're going to have to answer questions and we're going to discuss the book. Is that something that you're up for? Are you open to that?
I think that's certainly still within the range of possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe that is better served when there's a recently released book or recently published and then coming out, or even before it's getting ready to come out as part of your media campaign. I thought what would be more interesting would be a little bit of a longer piece, you know, a 20-30
mm-hmm.
minute presentation on some of the history of the case and some of the evidence that would help give people a bigger picture about what the new information is about, as opposed to just like a 5-minute, you know, talking
right.
head about a book coming out.
That, and I
think
I agree.
That's what people are interested in. I think that's what they want to see, because the visuals, I think, are pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
If you think the storyline in the book is interesting, I think the visuals are pretty impressive as well.
We're talking with Chief James Kohler. He wrote the book A Foreign Faction, Who Kidnapped JonBenet Ramsey. And we are also very pleased to have on our show Steve Thomas, the former investigator in the JonBenet Ramsey case for the Boulder Police Department. Chief Kohler, one of the frustrations that a lot of us have is the fact that we can't hear from the grand jury was seated by Alex Hunter. And I apologize, I can't remember the year. It might have been 2000. or maybe 1999. I don't remember, but it's very apparent if you look at the case that when the grand jury came back, when they were investigating the Ramseys, and Alex Hunter said there will be no indictment, I feel there's no question that Alex Hunter didn't ask them to vote, and we've always felt that. Is there any way possible that we can get a hold of the grand jury testimony or something from the grand jury that we can put out there so we can, again, just get to the truth? I mean, how do we go? Is it still against the law to publish it? I don't know what it is in Colorado.
Well, if you remember, the grand jury was finally convened in 1998, and I'm not wanting to put words in Steve's mouth, but I seem to recall that he was pretty frustrated that as a lead investigator, both he and some of the other folks that knew the case in and out would not be sworn as investigators. And there was a very small number of people with the police department that were actually assigned as grand jury investigators who would be able to see and review the evidence that was coming back. And then it was 1999, I think they were in session for almost a year, and they returned with Hunter's announcement indicating that he would not be filing charges. There's been a lot of legal wrangling, I believe, after the fact with Alex Hunter's involvement about release of any materials, even if there was no return or no report. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not sure if someone could successfully argue in front of a court of law to be able to release those records. That's more of an attorney question than
I would just love to do that.
Have knowledge to provide a good answer for you.
Well, the other thing is Lou Smith's PowerPoint presentation. Other people have their hands on it. People out there in the public. I'm not even going to say who they are because I don't want to give them any publicity. But how would we go? Could we request through the Freedom of Information Act? I just don't know. Do you have any idea how we can get anything like that, like the PowerPoint presentation? Or, again, is that a lawyer question?
Well, a lawyer might be able to give you better advice as to how to go about doing that, but it's my recollection that he made some of those presentations in public forums and also released some of that stuff to some of the television media outlets.
So you could argue that he's already released it. Now I'd like the whole thing, maybe.
Correct.
Okay, well, that might be a project that we have. We're going to take a few questions. Steve, stay with us. We have a few questions for Chief Kohler. But I know these people will want to say hi to you, Steve. So let's go to Cynic. Are you there, Cynic?
Hey, Cynic.
Hi, hold on. And let's go. Hold on one second. Let's go to Cold Case. Cold Case, are you there?
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's start with Cynic. Go ahead, my dear. You have a question, and I'm sure you wanted to say hi to Steve. Cynic?
Hello.
Dan, go ahead.
Hello,
go ahead. Can you hear me?
Yes,
I think you can hear. Okay. Go ahead and ask your question or say hello to Steve, and the floor is yours.
Hi, can you hear me, Tricia?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. Okay, hi, Chief Kohler. It's great to be able to speak with you once again. I'll answer one quick comment that was left unanswered. As you mentioned, the grand jury finally ended in October 13th of 1998, I believe. Anyway, back to a couple questions I had there. Did you have Steve Thomas review your book prior to you publishing the book?
No, he did not. And we had stayed in touch on a few occasions over the years, and also, as he mentioned, when I was at the DA's office actively involved in the investigation. I had told him at some point, I think after I left the DA's office, that I was considering writing a book, and I had some questions for him on a few points, but I never did send it to him for review prior to its publication.
Next question, my dear.
I guess I'm going to try to start a bit of a fight between you and Steve Thomas. Have either of you managed to make inroads on each other's viewpoints in the case? I know that the two of you slightly differ, and well, maybe not anymore, I'm not sure, but if you and Steve don't differ, then Steve must have perhaps come around to your viewpoint, because even though you're careful not to really specify what your view is, you do seem to, at least in from my perspective, lean toward Burke as being a strong possibility as the chief perpetrator in this case, whereas Steve, unless his viewpoint has changed, has always leaned toward Patsy, at least.
Cynic, we're just going to keep questions just directed to Chief Kohler.
Yep.
Directly.
It is, but Chief Kohler, you obviously lean toward Burke, well, at least you seem to, from my reading of the book. Did Steve's view, did you strongly consider Steve's view, or did the evidence, or was there sort of new evidence that led you perhaps away from, Steve's view? And actually, Steve's view was pretty much my view prior to reading your book, although you've certainly shifted my view at least slightly toward Burke as being a possibility. But have you, sort of strongly consider, each and every one of them? And obviously the evidence sort of led you in the direction that it did.
Well, when I was first evaluating evidence, I certainly was very interested in Steve's view, as indicated in conversations we had, as well as in the information provided in his book. And once I had finally reached that opinion that I didn't believe an intruder was involved, I started looking for behavior, for other reasons as to what might explain what happened with the family that would help point a direction as to who was involved as either a perpetrator or as a conspirator after the fact. I think Steve and I have only talked, maybe once after he read through my book. And I wouldn't tell you exactly what type of conversation we've had, and probably you'd have to ask him specifically if he thinks he's changed his mind based on what you say are leanings toward Burke. But I don't think that would be a fair question for me to answer, because only he knows how he feels about it after his investigation, after reading mine.
I'm not going to put Steve on the
Trish,
hot seat.
I'll jump in if I may.
Sure.
Yeah, and I'll speak sort of in broader brushstroke terms.
In code.
over the last 16 years, a great body of investigative work has sort of been compiled in the case history, and advances in DNA technologies and evidence review and testing, have occurred. And certainly under the institution of the DA's office under which I worked at the time, there was great conflict there. And then the successor DA, Mary Keenan Lacey, I think Chief Kohler experienced, I don't want to speak for him, but reading his book, a great deal of frustration. But at some point, perhaps the DA's office or Chief Kohler actually, made strides and hoped that, a grand jury could reconvene. And sometimes it takes more than just the investigator to get it off the dime. It takes the full force and might of the government vis-a-vis a grand jury to and a willing prosecutor. Now, I will say this. Jim Kohler and I both still have friends at the Boulder Police Department, and there are a handful of incredible cops there. I'll name two, Chuck Heidel, a detective, and he's brought a handful of cold cases, long cold murder cases, back to the fore of late. They've sought prosecution and they've got convictions. Another one, the deputy chief Dave Hayes, on a long, long cold case, the Sid Wells murder case, they've recently issued an arrest warrant some 20 or 30 years after that homicide. And these guys at Boulder PD say there's a new DA's office, a new institution in place with a much more pro-law enforcement prosecutor in charge. So regardless if Chief Kohler and I, you know, may have some differences of opinion, within the case, I think we share more things in common than we do apart as far as the case goes. And perhaps at some point, hopefully not another 16 years on, but the case, along with all these other cold cases that are getting reviewed and prosecuted, may warrant another look. And one of the things Chief Kohler mentioned in his book that may prove quite helpful is subpoenas or demands on perhaps certain medical records or psychiatric records or mm-hmm. Any number of things that you've got to have the cooperation of the grand jury or the prosecutor to obtain. So if that's any sort of big picture answer there, Tricia, but Jim Kohler and I probably, and I don't want to speak for Jim, probably, I'll put it this way, are not pro-intruder theorists by any means.
No. Steve, I do want to ask you one thing. You have often said that you don't think there will ever be a resolution to this case. Having read Chief Kohler's book, do you think there might be, by resolution, I mean it will become apparent and obvious what really happened through the evidence? Do you think that's a possibility now?
Well, perhaps. I mean, it's just speculation on my part, and whether that's, you know, you close a case, you can close a case by arrest, clear it by arrest. You can clear it by, exceptionally clear it by, for example, the death of the offender. There's a number of ways to close a case. One is through arrest, trial, conviction. Mm-hmm. But I certainly remain open-minded and want to believe that, Tricia.
Me too, absolutely. We have a question from our chat room, and this is for Chief James Kohler. Chief Kohler, can Mary Lacy be charged with dereliction of duty or something for the way she handled this case? Because in my mind, it was criminal the way she handled the JonBenet Ramsey case.
Well, that could be a prosecutor's question.
I know, but in your opinion,
I think the problem I had was that she was hanging her hat, her opinion on the DNA evidence, and not willing to consider the other things that point away from an intruder. And I tried to sway that thought process when I put that presentation together for her in January of 2006, before I left the office, that suggested, you know, hey, the stun gun does not match the injuries. If you take away the stun gun, you take away the likelihood that an intruder was involved. Mm-hmm. And you had to take another look at who in the family could have possibly been involved. So I don't know if that rises to criminal conduct, if you're thinking that it's a dereliction of duty, if people have a strongly held opinion about the evidence in the case.
Well, how about just
be a stretch.
Basically sabotaging the case by not looking at the evidence, by refusing to look at the black and white evidence. I guess the problem I have with Mary Lacy is she was just let off scot-free and never had to answer for any of the horrendous things that she did while she held the office of district attorney. That's just my opinion on that. Let's go to our caller. We have Cold Case, a long time JonBenet Ramsey poster and a good friend of ours. Cold Case, the floor is yours.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Tricia, for having me. And I'd like to say good evening and happy holidays to Steve and Chief Kohler and Cynic and you and all your listeners.
Thank you. You too, my dear.
I have I have limited myself to, let's see, what did you say? I had 10 questions, Trish?
Not quite. That whole case
so
could go
I'll
on
just jump right
ever.
In.
Okay.
Since you, someone, let's see, I believe Steve did mention the issue of, and Chief Kohler also wrote about this, the issue of medical records, and that was a key point, I believe, you made, Chief Kohler, about subpoenaing the medical records of the Ramseys. And there was a passage in Steve's book, and I know you're not speaking to this, Steve, but I did want to get Chief Kohler's thoughts on this, where Steve said that JonBenet had been in therapy before she died, that information came to them. He didn't give any specific details, and that a therapist was called who said, call the Ramseys. And I just wondered if you had any thoughts on that, Chief Kohler.
Well, to be honest with you, cold case, I don't recall reading about her being in therapy. It came to light during my review of some of the records and interviews that I think Patsy and Burke had been in therapy. But I can't tell you for certain that I remember that JonBenet had been in therapy. That just didn't sound familiar to me.
Cold case, we have time for one more question. I just wanted to let you know
that.
Well,
let me follow that up. Are you saying
okay.
Patsy and Burke were in therapy before the murder?
Chief Kohler?
No, I think that was subsequent to the murder. It wasn't real clear from the record as to when that was taking place. But I remember there was an interview where medication was being prescribed by Burke's psychiatrist and Patsy, too.
Right.
Okay,
one other question. You mentioned that there was, Chief Kohler, that there was feces on some candy in the house. I believe you said specifically JonBenet's bedroom. And we were wondering, and I say we in the royal we, if that was tested for identification of the donor.
The owner. The perpetrator of the poop, yes.
The contributor.
I never saw anything that suggested that there'd been any testing of that.
So that just
you did mention that there were pajama bottoms on the floor that were believed to be Burke's, and you know I'm assuming they were boys' pajama bottoms on her bedroom floor.
That was my interpretation of the reports that I read.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. You know what? Cold case, I apologize. We'll have to get to your 8 other questions next time. I know you have 80 more, and we could keep Chief Kohler here through the rest of the year, no doubt. Thank you so much, cold case. I'm going to put you back on hold right now. Well, gentlemen, it has been a fascinating hour. I do have one more guest I have to get to because we have a very special announcement. It's concerning a different case, but we'll be getting with Cheryl McCollum here in just a little bit to make this announcement. But I really want to thank, first of all, Steve Thomas. I know you're very private, but you're always gracious and wonderful, and I am proud to call you my friend and give your love to my family and have a very Merry Christmas. And you know, if there is ever anything you need, you call me, and we've got a whole army of people ready to help you.
Well, I sure appreciate it, Tricia. Thank you for having me on, and enjoyed sharing the hour with Chief Kohler, and Jim sure enjoyed your book, and thank you for writing it, and Merry Christmas to everybody, and talk to you again next year.
You got it. And Chief Kohler, thank you so very much. Is there anything you would like to add, Chief Kohler, about your book or about the case, just to kind of wrap it up?
I'm working on trying to get a Kindle version out there. It's becoming a little problematic because of all the images and documents and such. But look for that. Hopefully I've got some professionals working on formatting that. So that should be available. I'm keeping my fingers crossed not too soon or too far down the road. And also, I really enjoyed this evening with Steve. We chat every once in a while, exchange emails, and I really enjoyed having him participate in the program tonight. And I would recommend anyone who wants to read his book to pull it out of the mothballs or buy it again, because I thought it was a great read.
I think we probably have that book memorized by now. We've read it quite a few times. Chief James Kohler, your book, A Foreign Faction, Who Kidnapped JonBenet Ramsey, again, thank you for all you have done. You've really gone out on a personal limb here by getting the book published yourself. You're doing it all yourself, and you're doing it, you're not making any money. You're doing it for all the right reasons, just like Steve Thomas was, and that's to get the truth out about the case. And I will tell you, like I told Steve, if there's ever anything you need, Chief Kohler, you know who to call, because you have a big army just waiting here to help you, okay?
All right. Well, thank you, and happy holidays, everyone.
Thank you. Merry Christmas. Thanks. Happy holidays. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, that was a fascinating hour, and I know we could have gone 3 or 4 hours, but Chief Kohler does have a life. I know, it's hard to believe that he doesn't want to, you know, that he can't spend the whole night with us, and he wants to be with his family. What a goof. Okay, so anyway, we'll have him back on again very soon. But now I want to go to my friend Cheryl McCollum. Cheryl, how are you, my dear?
I'm excellent. How are you?
I'm good. Now, Cheryl is the director of the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. Did I get that right?
You did. Perfect.
I've been practicing. Cheryl, tell us really briefly, didn't you guys just crack a big case recently?
Well, we've had some success in a couple of cases. Which one are you talking about specifically?
I just heard that you just broke a big case. That was what I was told.
Well, I don't know that I can name that yet, but
okay.
Yes, the students have had some great success. Yes.
Okay. What about what you can? What about what you can name? That's what I'm talking about. Is what you can name?
Oh, okay. Sure. Well, of course, the students were involved with Drew Peterson early on, so they're still kind of reeling off that, and they're thrilled, and they've been working on Susan Powell, specifically locating her. So they've been, plugging along. And then there's Sean Beatty in Oklahoma, where hopefully a witness that has come forward is going to help resolve that case, hopefully.
That is, I just love what you do. It's so fascinating. Now, how does the Cold Case, how does it work, the Cold Case Institute, Research Institute work? Is it online? Do you have a classroom? How does that happen?
Well, there's 9 colleges involved across the country, and each college has their own area of expertise. So Auburn University Montgomery, for example, has crime analysis, and Faulkner University does victimology, and Metro State College of Denver does crime mapping. So each college does their own specific area, and they research alone at first, and then at the end of the year we usually come together. Or if there's a break or something pretty significant, then we bring everybody in to see whether or not we're on the right track. And if we are, then everybody puts all of their expertise into one basket.
Is your goal to have as many colleges/universities as possible involved?
Yes, plus people, plus experts. We firmly believe that you cannot have enough eyes looking at it. I think JonBenet, what you just did, is a perfect example. And I don't know who Cold Case was, but I could have kept listening to her, too.
Oh, she's wonderful. She's brilliant. She would be an addition to your institute. I mean, her and Cynic both. You weren't on the phone when Cynic was talking, but they're two brilliant people who would absolutely thrive in your institute. But if there isn't a college involved in your area, then you can't join up, right?
No, not at all. We take individuals a lot.
You do? Okay.
And what we'll do is, depending, let's say, on what maybe they're in your group by themselves stands alone. So you could be actually brought in as, a research entity yourself, web sleuth, because you've got so many people that now have, solid knowledge on how to work a case or the right questions to ask. And you can't even put a value, on what that can add to any case. Because sometimes you look at something long enough, you cannot see it.
Right.
You know, it's like I tell my students all the time, it was, you know, two high school teachers that broke the Zodiac Code.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the term civilian. That doesn't negate the fact that you could help tremendously.
Exactly. Well, I would suggest that Cynic and Cold Case get in touch with you because they would be amazing. And I'm sure that that they would love you too, Cheryl. And we're going to talk a little bit about Web Sleuths in a moment, but we have a big announcement. I am so excited. When Cheryl McCollum called me, I thought, I'm dreaming. This is just too good to be true. Okay, Cheryl, I want you to tell us what you're going to do for us in the George Zimmerman case.
Okay. Well, to me, there's no better way to understand any case until you have boots on the ground. You've got to walk the scene. You've got to get a feel for exactly what the area is like and what the people are like and what the homes are like and what the weather's like. Everything is important. So I thought there's no better way to bring this to Web Sleuth than to go there and then, you know, kind of report to you from the town while the trials are going on. So what I hope to do is bring you all kind of experts, whether it's Holly Hughes or Vince Velasquez or whoever I can find, that will come on with me and walk you through exactly what's happened from a police standpoint, from a community standpoint, from a prosecution standpoint, as well as the defense, so that you can understand without any hype, without any let's make this more dramatic than it is, which this is a case that needs no more drama.
Boy, that's the truth.
It's going to be fascinating enough, but if we tell the truth and we go to the local barbershop and we go to the local high school and we go, you know, and talk to some police officers and prosecutors and defense attorneys, then we can get a sense of, okay, this is what's happening. Because the first trial will be sometime in April, and that will be a mini trial, a real small one, whether or not Mr. Zimmerman can use Stand Your Ground.
Mm-hmm.
And from that trial, we move to June. So what I hope to do the first week of April, because I think it's real important to get people's opinion and get a feel for what's going on before the trial, because anybody can Monday morning quarterback.
Yes.
You know? Like a lot of people now say, oh, yeah, Casey Anthony was going to walk, but they weren't saying it then.
No, they weren't.
We want to know, what are you saying now? What is the feel now? Who's calling for riots, if anybody? Who's calling for this, if anybody? And
mm-hmm.
I think that's going to be just an awesome way for us to really start dissecting this case, as well as learning a whole lot.
You're absolutely right. So basically, you're going to be our reporter on the ground for the George Zimmerman case. Now, we're still working out the details, but what I'd like to do is to do a radio show once a day where you can come on and wrap it all up and we can have guests on. So every day during the trial, you can come to Trisha's True Crime Radio, hear Cheryl McCollum talk about what has happened and what's going on, and then also we can report it back on Web Sleuth. So I am so thrilled that we're going to have you, somebody, you know, you are such a high caliber, incredible person to be coming to us as our reporter. I mean, I'm on top of the world, really. I ate my own weight in cream pie. I was so excited. I'm just like, this is too good to be true. I'm going to eat all
of
this.
Very nice. But
so
honestly, your group can honestly set the tone, and I think that's what we're going to need here. We
mm-hmm.
don't need any more, you know, vile statements, drama, you know, misinformation. We don't need any of that. We just need a pure understanding from a judicial standpoint what's happening. And then, of course, how can we help, you know, get that out, that no, that's not right, this is right.
Mm-hmm. And that's what's going to be so wonderful is you're going to be on the ground. You know what to do, what to ask, who to talk to. It's going to be like we're there during the George Zimmerman trial, and that's what's going to be so amazing. Now, you've also encouraged your students at the Institute to become a member of Web Sleuths, right? And maybe
Absolutely.
Start joining in. I'm hoping we can roll this into joining forces, don't you? Isn't that your goal, too?
Oh, it absolutely is my goal. Because, you know, again, I can't state this firmly enough. Everybody has a gift, and everybody has something that God if, like, I hear people all the time say, you know what, I wish I could have asked this detective, or I wish I could have told them to look here or ask this person that. And maybe it's just something law enforcement didn't think of,
mm-hmm.
you know, or maybe it's something they did think about, but maybe they weren't sure. You know how you do. And a lot of times, like, I'll give you a specific example. When Susan Smith in Union, South Carolina, came out and said she was carjacked,
right,
and the perpetrator drove off with her children, I have four sisters, and they all have children, and they are flight attendants and middle school teachers and nurses, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So not people that carry guns, not people that are going to, you know, defend people or fight or anything like that. Without hesitation, every one of them, before I left to go to Union to help, every sister of mine told me there's no way I would have got out of the car.
Right.
Okay? Completely changed the way I felt before I got up there.
Mm-hmm.
I knew she was lying before.
Yeah, they, right. Your sisters, knew it. They knew it. And that's what you're looking
as
for.
As a mother. That's right.
Right.
That's right. And at the time, I didn't have children. I do now. I get
mm-hmm.
it now.
Yeah, now, exactly. It. Right, me
completely
too.
Completely different. But mm-hmm. at the time, you're thinking, this is awful. She was carjacked. She was going to maybe get out and go around and get the children. And my sister's like, oh, no, that wouldn't have happened. They'd have been like, shoot me where I'm at, George. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I'm not getting out of the car. And
that's
then, of
right.
course, logic starts to set in with me. And who carjacked somebody in Union? I mean, to go where? I mean,
yeah, what, yeah,
you're
exactly.
nowhere already. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just one of those things that, of course, her story began to unravel. But then as we all were talking, then it became clear, keep her on camera, keep her talking, which is another way you come in. Because I have a strong belief that any media, electronic media, whether it's Facebook or Web Sleuth or Blog Talk Radio, that's a great way to solve cases. And that's
mm-hmm.
something we use at the Institute. TV and newspapers and magazines, your show, that's what we try to use. That was a huge component when we worked the Chandra Levy case.
Mm-hmm.
It was a huge component when we worked Natalie Holloway. And frankly, Beth Holloway was probably the best parent I've ever seen, other than maybe Mark Class,
mm-hmm.
to really understand that as a tool. And
right.
maybe if it doesn't have the result for your child, it certainly will for others. And then we've seen, of course, Amber Hagerman and John Walsh. I mean, there's no question.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this serves almost as like the modern-day wanted poster, in my opinion. I mean,
you're
tape on a wall,
right.
don't get it. But you can reach 50,000 people tonight, and
mm-hmm.
they can reach 270 by in the morning. That's remarkable. Remarkable.
That's big. That's
mm-hmm.
big. And I'm very excited to have your students start joining Web Sleuths, and we're going to talk about setting up perhaps a special area and getting everybody
right.
together on the same page. And I've always felt, too, that everybody has something to offer. That's what I've always said from the very beginning. That's the reason why I decided to own forums. I have a very strong opinion that there are people out there who think they don't have anything to offer, and they're wrong. They do.
Absolutely.
They don't even necessarily need to solve a case or whatever. Just by posting and being involved is a big difference. So everybody out there is important. Everybody out there matters. And that's why Web Sleuths will always be free. Same with forumsforjustice.org. We'll never charge anybody because I want everybody to have total and complete access. And now, Cheryl, with your institute and us kind of joining forces here, I don't think there's anything that can stop us. I think the criminals better watch out.
Oh, they should be very afraid.
They should be very afraid. Tell us
yep.
the website. Tell us where people can go to find out more information about your institute and how they can join up.
Cold Case Investigative Research Institute.org. They can find me a couple of places on Facebook. And, you know, they can also, through you,
yes.
I will give you another email when we hang up. And then through
okay.
you can figure out how to let them see it only.
Absolutely.
And maybe what we can even do is if they've got eventually some good questions they want me to ask or places they want me to try to go to get insight to something. Because, again, I plan to go as many places as we can to get the real vibe,
mm-hmm.
figure out exactly what's happening, and see how close everybody else is reporting. And I plan that if we can give video or whatever we can do is what we're going to try to do for you.
God, that's great. Well, like I told Steve Thomas and Chief James Kohler, anything you need, you just ask. You have an army waiting to help you because that's why we're here. We want to make a difference. And you certainly do, Cheryl McCollum. You make a difference every single day. We'll be in touch. You're going to be on the show again very soon, I'm sure. And let's look forward to that trial. It will be an amazing summer with Cheryl McCollum reporting on the ground live from the George Zimmerman trial for us, for Web Sleuths and Trisha's True Crime Radio. It's going to be amazing. Cheryl, thank you so much, my dear. I really appreciate it. And we'll be talking to you soon, okay?
Thanks to all of you. Thank you so much.
Take care. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas, honey.
Bye-bye. Oh, Kimster, are you there? Kimster, hello.
Hello.
Oh, wow. That was a great show. I got to say, our guests were just amazing.
Oh, absolutely. I'll tell you what, I'm really into what Cheryl's doing, as you can imagine, being that I'm into cold cases. So,
exactly.
Yeah, I just fascinating. I'd love to be on the ground on all of them, you know.
Oh, wouldn't that be great? Well, let's talk about the cold case, the Web Sleuth's hot cold case of the week. And Kimster, the floor is yours.
Well, first of all, I would like to wish all of our listeners a very Merry Christmas and the best new year you've ever known.
Thank you.
And Tricia, there are some really fun to read threads in the private forum right now.
Mm-hmm.
One I was looking at earlier today, it's called House Guest Behavior, the Winners and the
Losers. Oh, that's great. I saw that. That is so cool. That's so fun.
Our members are so ingenious. Where do they
are.
These great. There was another one about whistling, and it reminded me of my grandfather and how he used to always whistle Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa. And a friend of mine's father, a few months ago, I saw him, and he was whistling that, and it almost brought tears to my eyes. And, you know, we were talking about that. People used to whistle all the time. We need to do more whistling.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, but I'm not going to whistle this. I'm going to say, doo, 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 doo.
It's time. There's the horn. You know it's time.
Right. Tricia, back in November of 1981, just before the holiday season took off, a 13-year-old teenage girl went missing. Her name was Amy Yakimek. Amy went missing from Phoenix, Arizona. She was wearing a blue terry cloth short sleeve shirt, maroon colored slacks, and blue slip on shoes. Remember those terry cloth shirts?
Sure.
Yeah, I used to wear one. I had one that was a burnt orange. They were real popular.
Absolutely.
They'll be back.
Hopefully, someday.
Hopefully this next year, yeah. Her childhood friend has posted on Web Sleuths, and she said this: Amy was the sweetest, shyest girl I've ever known. Whatever happened was out of her control, and I know in my heart she would never have gone with anyone willingly. She loved her family more than anything and wouldn't hurt them by running away, nor would any of them ever hurt her. This tore not only her family apart, but everyone who knew her and changed all our lives. And then she also said there was a talk of a neighbor being involved. And then, Tricia, more recently, Amy's sister has been posting on websleuths.com, and she said Amy went with some people willingly that she knew, and she tried to wake up her sister to go, but she didn't want to go with her, so she didn't. And there's more, so don't miss reading up on this cold case. It's one of those cases on Web Sleuths where the hair on the back of your neck will stand up. Yeah, believe me. So, if you want to post and give Amy's sister some help in how to go about finding Amy, please go to www.websleuths.com. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a picture of Amy along with a link to her thread, but only if you're a member of Web Sleuths. So, please join today. And, Tricia, how much does it cost to join websleuths.com?
oh my flipping heck, as we say in Utah. It's absolutely free. We just need an email address. We don't need your blood type. We don't need your firstborn. We don't need any other personal information. Don't believe the rumors. We just need an email address, and then you pick your name. You pick whatever name you want, as long as it's not obscene, and then you join in. It's that simple. Kim, sir, thank you so very much, my dear. Have a wonderful Christmas. Enjoy your family, and thank you for all you do for Trisha's True Crime Radio. I couldn't do it without you, my dear.
Thank you, and you have a wonderful time with your family as well.
I will. And we'll be back next week. Yes, we do not take a vacation. I have no idea who the guests will be, but I guarantee you it's going to be interesting. We are going to count down some of the biggest true crime stories of the year, kind of get an update on them as much as we possibly can. We're working on that right now, so be sure and join us next week. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and the guests and do not represent in any way, shape, or form anything to do with WebSleuths.com, LLC, or ForumsForJustice.org. Both of them are completely separate entities, okay? It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss current events and true crime, and we always do it with common sense. Merry Christmas, everybody. Good night. Bye-bye.